This is audiobook in MP3, 30 minutes parts of The Causal Body and the Ego by Arthur E. Powell. About the books of Arthur E. Powell. Those are to describe the nature and reality of the higher worlds and the equivalent bodies we carry in our multi-being. So the purpose of these books is to make the complicated, extensive study of the Old Eastern, Tibetan spiritual books, available for the student, whose time for intensive study is limited. The compiler has consolidated the information obtained from a large number of books, a list of which is given in each, arranging the material, which covers a vast field and is exceedingly complex, as methodically as lay within his power. It is hoped that by this means present and future students will be saved much labor and research, being able not only to find the information they require presented in a relatively small compass, but also, with the help of marginal references, to refer, should they so desire, to the original sources of information. The proper study of mankind is man, and the subject is so vast, so absorbing, and so important that everything possible should be done to make readily accessible to all who thirst for such knowledge the whole of the information which has so far been accumulated. Arthur E. Powell has sifted right through the collected works of Charles Webster Leadbeater and Annie Besant, with minor additions from other authors, including H. P. Bavitsky and A. P. Sinnott, and produced very readable, understandable and comprehensive books about the etheric body, the astral body, the mental body, the causal body, the ego, and the esoteric solar system. They're excellent books for beginners, very hard to put down. They are also very valuable for people who already have a good grasp of the topics. They can change the way you perceive yourself and others, and bring you to a different level of understanding of the world we live in. It is a series of 5 books edited by Colonel Arthur E. Powell. He very methodically combined information from a number of theosophical authors in the early part of the 20th century. These books are a wealth of esoteric information. They are more head-centered than heart-centered. However, these books must preferably be read in the following order: etheric double, astral body, mental body, causal body, and solar system. Each builds on the last, a publication of the Theosophical Society. Page 2, The Causal Body and the Ego by Arthur E. Powell. Introduction. This book forms the fourth, and last, of the series of compilations dealing with the bodies of man. Throughout the series the same plan has been adopted. Approximately 40 volumes, mostly those written by Annie Besant and by C. W. Leadbeater, have been thoroughly searched. The material thus found has been sorted, arranged and classified into its appropriate departments, so as to present to the student of modern theosophy a coherent and sequential account of the finer bodies of man. In addition, there has been incorporated a considerable amount of information regarding the planes, or worlds, associated with these 4 bodies of man. It is therefore probably near the truth to say that the gist of nearly everything that has been published by the 2 principal pioneers into the mysteries and complexities of the ancient wisdom, with the exception of certain clearly marked specialities, such as occult chemistry, for example, is to be found in these 4 books. The compiler thus hopes that the intensive labor, which has occupied him for about 3.5 years, will serve to make a little easier the path of those who desire to obtain a comprehensive grasp of what may be termed the technical aspects of modern theosophy. In view of the fact that our occult knowledge, of planes finer than the physical, is likely to be enormously increased in the near future, it has seemed desirable to undertake the not inconsiderable task of arranging, in textbook form, such data as are already in our possession, before the total mass becomes too unwieldy to be handled in this manner. Moreover, by such orderly arrangement of our materials, we construct for ourselves an outline, or skeleton into which further information can be built, as it becomes available. As in the previous volumes, references to the sources of the information have throughout been given in the margin, when using the book, so that any student who so desires, may verify for himself every statement made at its original source. In the few cases where the compiler has stated his own unsupported views, the initials AEP have been printed in the margin. About 2/3 of the diagrams are original, the remainder having been taken, sometimes with slight modifications, from the works of C.W. Leadbeater, and a few from A Study in Consciousness, by Annie Besant. A further department of theosophical knowledge, to a great extent self-contained, and therefore specialized, is that of the scheme of evolution in which man evolves. This includes globes, such as the Earth, rounds, chains, races, sub-races, and so forth. The writer hopes to compile a volume dealing with this section of technical theosophy, in the near future. A. E. Powell, page 3, chapter 1, general description. In the three preceding volumes of this series, viz., the etheric double, the astral body, and the mental body, the life history of each of the three lower vehicles of man has been studied. In these studies, it has been sufficient for us to take each of the three vehicles as we find it actually existing in man, and to examine its methods of functioning, the laws of its growth, its death, and then the formation, from the nucleus provided by the permanent atoms and mental unit, of new vehicles of the same kind, in order that man's evolution on the three lower planes can be continued. When we come to study the causal body of man, we enter upon a new phase of our work, and must take a far wider sweep in our purview of man's evolution. The reason for this is, that whilst the etheric, astral and mental bodies exist for one human incarnation only, that is, a distinctly mortal, the causal body persists throughout the whole of man's evolution, through many incarnations, and is therefore relatively immortal. We say relatively immortal advisedly because, as will be seen in due course, there is a point where a man, having completed his purely normal human evolution, commences his supernormal human evolution, and actually loses the causal body in which he has lived and evolved during the past ages of his growth. Hence, in dealing with man's causal body, we are no longer standing within the personality, looking upon any vehicle of that personality, and seeing from its own standpoint how it is serving the evolution of the real man who uses it. But instead we must take up our stand by the side of the man himself, looking from above on the vehicles of the personality, and regarding them as so many temporary instruments fashioned for the use of the man himself, and discarded, as a broken tool is discarded, when they have served their purpose. Furthermore, in order to make our study comprehensive, and to round it off in a manner that will be intellectually satisfactory, we must discover and study the origin and birth of the causal body, that is, how it has formed in the first instance. Finding that it had a beginning, we see at once, not only that it must have an end, but also that there must be some other form of consciousness which uses the causal body, much as the ego in the causal body uses the vehicles of the personality. This other form of consciousness is, of course, the human monad. Hence, in order that we may fully comprehend the part that the causal body plays in the tremendous story of human evolution, we must study also the human monad. Reverting to the birth or formation of the causal body, we are at once plunged into a consideration of the somewhat intricate subject of group souls, with which we shall have to deal. Tracing the origin of group souls, we are led back, step by step, to the three great outpourings of the divine life, from which all forms of manifested life arise. Whilst studying the three outpourings, we must necessarily consider to some extent the formation of the material world into which the outpourings are projected. Thus, in order that our study of the causal body may be a comprehensive one, we must describe, though in brief outline only, the formation of the field of evolution, the flow into that field of the great streams of life, the coming forth of the monads, the building of the many kingdoms of life, and the plunging of the, page 4, monads, with the assistance of the permanent atoms, into the material universe, and the gradual development of the life in the group souls until eventually, after eons of existence, the point of individualization is reached, when the causal body for the first time appears. Thereafter, our study will follow much the same lines as in the previous books of this series. We shall have to deal in turn with the functions of the causal body, its composition and structure, the nature of causal thought, the development and faculties of the causal body, the portion of life after death spent in the causal body in the higher heaven worlds. Then we must pass to a fuller examination of the entity, the ego, to wit, who inhabits and uses the causal body, projecting from it personality after personality into the cycle of reincarnation. We must examine what is known as Trishna, the thirst, which is the true cause of reincarnation, the permanent atoms and the mechanism of reincarnation, the attitude which the ego takes toward the whole process of reincarnation and to the personalities which he projects into the lower worlds. The whole relationship of the ego to the personality, his link with it, and the way in which he uses it, must be carefully examined. A special chapter will be devoted to certain sacramental aids towards strengthening and improving the link between the ego and the personality, and another chapter to the rationale of the memory of past lives. Then we pass to describe, so far as is possible, the life of the ego on his own plane. This leads us on to initiation into the Great White Brotherhood, when the causal body vanishes for a time. Some description of the bodhic consciousness must be attempted, and a succinct epitome of such facts as are known regarding the second and higher initiations. Finally, we conclude our long history with the relation of the ego to his Father in heaven, the monad. The field which this book attempts to cover is thus, as already said, a far greater one than that covered in any of the three preceding volumes of the series. The book will, it is hoped, enabled the student of theosophy to obtain a broad grasp of the wonderful panorama of human evolution, and to see in true perspective the part played by each of the four subtler bodies of man, the etheric, the astral, the mental and the causal. Page 5, Chapter 2, The Field of Evolution. By the field of evolution we mean the material universe in which evolution is to take place. Strictly speaking, life or spirit, and matter are not in reality separate and distinct existences, but rather are opposite poles of one noumenon, but for purposes of intellectual analysis and study it is convenient to consider these two aspects or poles almost as though they were separate and distinct, much in the same way that a builder, for example, considers, more or less separately, plans and sections of his buildings, although these plans and sections are merely abstractions, from the one entity, the building itself. The field of evolution in our solar system consists of seven planes or worlds. These may be regarded as making up three groups: 1. The field of logoic manifestation only, 2. The field of supernormal evolution, 3. The field of normal human, animal, vegetable, mineral and elemental evolution. These facts may be tabulated as shown on page 5. The Adi and Anupadaka planes may be conceived as existing before the solar system is formed. The Adi plane may be imagined as consisting of so much of the matter of space, symbolized by points, as the logos marks out to form the material basis of the system he is about to produce. The Anupadaka plane, symbolized by lines, we may imagine as consisting of this same matter, modified or colored by his individual life, his all-ensouling consciousness, thus differing in some way from the corresponding plane in another solar system. These ideas may be roughly symbolized thus. Page 6, The Fields of Evolution, Diagram 1. Number Name Field of Evolution Group Serial Sanskrit English I1adi, Alogoic 2anupadaka, B23 Atmospirit Supernormal Human, that is, initiates. 4 Buddhi Intuition 3-5 Manas Mind Normal Human, animal, vegetable, mineral and elemental entities. 6 Karma Emotions 7 Stula Physical Activity Notes, A, no English equivalent exists, AD means literally first, B, no English equivalent exists, Anupadaka means literally without vesture. First stage the logos marks out his universe on the AD plane. Second stage the logos modifies this matter with his own individual life, on the Anupadaka plane. This preparatory work may be illustrated in another way by two sets of symbols, one showing the threefold manifestation of the consciousness of the logos, the other the threefold change in matter corresponding to the threefold change in consciousness. Taking first the manifestation of consciousness, the site of the universe having been marked out, see Diagram 2, 1, the logos himself appears as a point within the sphere, 2. The logos goes forth from that point in three directions to the circumference of that sphere or circle of matter. 3. The consciousness of the logos returns on itself, manifesting at each point of contact with the circle one of the three fundamental aspects of consciousness, known as will, wisdom and activity, as well as by other terms. The joining of the three aspects, or phases of manifestation, at their outer points of contact with the circle, gives the basic triangle of contact with matter. This triangle, together with the three triangles formed by the lines traced by the point, yields the divine tetracts, sometimes called the cosmic quaternary. Taking now the changes set up in universal matter, corresponding to the manifestations of consciousness, we have, in the sphere of primordial substance, the virgin matter of space, see diagram 3, and for talk on the diagrams here, it is best to search up those as the recitation goes on. Circle. Colon the logos, 1, appearing as a point irradiating the sphere of matter, 2, the point vibrating between center and circumference, thus making the line which marks the drawing apart from spirit and matter, 3, the point, with the line revolving with it, vibrating at right angles to the form of vibration, and forming the primordial cross within the cross is thus said to proceed from the Father, the point, and the Son, the diameter, and represents the third logos, the creative mind, the divine activity ready to manifest as creator. Page 8, Chapter 3, the coming forth of the monads. Before considering the creative activity of the third logos, and the detailed preparation of the field of evolution, we must note the origination of the monads or units of consciousness, for whose evolution in matter the field of a universe is prepared. We shall return to their fuller consideration in a later chapter. The myriads of these units, who are to be developed in the coming universe, are generated within the divine life, before the field for their evolution is formed. Of this forth going it has been written, that willed, I shall multiply and be born, Khandopanishad 2, 3, thus the many arise in the one by that act of will. The act of will is that of the first logos, the undivided Lord, the Father. The monads are described as sparks of the supreme fire, as divine fragments. The occult catechism, quoted in the Secret Doctrine, I, 145, says, lift thy head, O Lanu, dost thou see one, or countless, lights above thee, burning in the midnight sky? I sense one flame, O Grudiva, I see countless, undetached sparks shining in it. The flame is Ishvara, in his manifestation, as the first logos. The undetached sparks are the monads, human and other. The word undetached should be especially noted, as signifying that the monads are the logos himself. A monad may thus be defined as a fragment of the divine life, separated off as an individual entity by rarest film of matter, matter so rare that, while it gives a separate form to each, it offers no obstacle to the free intercommunication of the life, thus encased with the surrounding similar lives. A monad is thus not pure consciousness, pure self, samvit. That is an abstraction. In the concrete universe there are always the self and his sheaths, however tenuous the sheaths may be, so that the unit of consciousness is inseparable from matter. Hence a monad is consciousness plus matter. The monad of theosophy is the Jivatma of Indian philosophy, the Prussia of the Samkhya, the particularized self of the Vedanta. The life of the monads being thus of the first logos, they may be described as sons of the Father, just as the second logos himself is the son of the Father, but the monads are but younger sons, with none of their divine powers, capable of acting in matter denser than that of their own plane the Anupadaka, while the second logos, with ages of evolution behind him, stands ready to exercise his divine powers, the firstborn among many brethren. Whilst the roots of their life are in the Adi plane, the monads themselves dwell on the Anupadaka plane, as yet without vehicles in which they can express themselves, awaiting the day of manifestation of the sons of God. There they remain, while the third logos begins the external work of manifestation, shaping the matter of the objective universe. This work will be described in the next chapter. Page 9, Diagram 4 indicates the monads waiting on their own plane whilst the world, in which they are to develop is being fashioned. These units of consciousness, known as monads, are described as the sons, abiding from the beginning of a creative age, in the bosom of the Father, who have not yet been made perfect through suffering. Each of them is truly equal to the Father as touching his Godhead, but inferior to the father as touching his manhood in the words of the Athanasian Creed. Each of them is to go forth into matter in order to render all things subject to himself, 1 Corinthians 15:28. He is to be sown in weakness that he may be raised in power, Ibid 15:43. From a static condition unfolding all divine potentialities, he is to become dynamic, unfolding all divine powers. Whilst omniscient, omnipresent, on his own plane the Anupadaka, he is unconscious, senseless, on all others. He is to veil his glory in matter that blinds him, in order that he may become omniscient, omnipresent, on all planes, able to answer to all divine vibrations in the universe, instead of only those of the highest levels. As the monads derive their being from the first logos, his will to manifest is also their will. Hence, the whole process of the evolution of the individual I is an activity chosen by the monads themselves. We are here in the worlds of matter, because, we as monads will to live, we are self-moved, self-determined. This divine impulse, striving ever after fuller manifestation of life, is seen everywhere in nature, and has often been spoken of as the will to live. It appears in the seed, which pushes its growing point up towards the light, in the bud bursting its prison and expanding in the sunshine. It is the creative genius in the painter, the sculptor, the poet, the musician, the craftsman. The subtlest pleasure, the keenest savor of exquisite delight derives from this urge, from within, to create. All things feel most alive when multiplying themselves by creation. To expand, to increase, results from the will to live. The fruition is the bliss of living, the joy of being alive. Page 10, Chapter 4, The Formation of the Five Planes. Continuing now with the creative process. The third logos, the universal mind, works on the matter of space, Mulay Prakriti. The celestial Virgin Mary throwing its three qualities of dharmas, inertia, Raja's mobility, and Sattva rhythm, out of stable into unstable equilibrium, and therefore into continual motion in relation to each other. The third logos thus creates the atoms of the five lower planes: Atma, Buddhi, Manas, Karma, and Stula. Fohat electrifies into life and separates primordial stuff, or pregenetic matter, into atoms. We may note, parenthetically, that there are three stages in the formation of these atoms: 1. The fixing of the limit within which the life of the logos shall vibrate, this being known as the divine measure or Tanmatra, literally the measure of that, that being the divine spirit. 2. The marking out of the axes of growth of the atom, the lines which determine its shape, these correspond to the axes of crystals. 3. From the measurement of the vibration, and the angular relation of the axes with each other, the surface or wall of the atom is determined. Under the directive activity of the third logos, the atoms of each plane are awakened to new powers and possibilities of attraction and repulsion, so that they aggregate into molecules, and simpler molecules into complex ones, until, on each of the five planes, six lower subplanes are formed, making, in all, seven subplanes on each plane. The matter of the subplane so formed, however, is not the now existing, it is the more strongly attractive or cohesive energies of the second logos, the aspect of wisdom or love, which brings about the further integrations into the forms of matter with which we are acquainted. Furthermore, the whirling currents in the atoms, known as spirali, are not made by the third logos, but by the monads, with whom we shall deal presently. The spirali are developed into full activity in the course of evolution, normally one in each round. Many of the practices of yoga are directed to bring about the more rapid development of the spirali. Page 11, Outpouring. Thus, in every atom lie involved innumerable possibilities of response to the three aspects of consciousness, and these possibilities are developed in the atom in the course of evolution. This work of the third logos is usually spoken of as the first life wave, or first outpouring. Diagram V illustrates this work of the third logos or first outpouring. We shall consider the matter a little further, and the ascent of the first outpouring, in the next and later chapters after we have dealt with the second. Page 12, Chapter 5, The Kingdoms of Life, into matter vivified by the third logos, The second great wave of the divine life descends, coming from the second Logos or second person of the Trinity. This is usually known as the second outpouring. The second person of the Trinity thus takes form, not of the virgin or unproductive matter alone, but of the matter which is already instinct with the life of the third person, so that both the life and the matter surround him as a vesture. It is thus an accurate statement that he is incarnate of the Holy Ghost and the Virgin Mary, which is the true rendering of a prominent passage in the Christian creed. Slowly and gradually this resistless flood of life pours down through the various planes and kingdoms, spending in each of them a period equal in duration to one entire incarnation of a planetary chain, and covering many millions of years. Note, a planetary chain consists of seven globes of matter, of various grades, round which the stream of evolving lives passes seven complete times. At various stages of its descent, the life of the second outpouring is known by various names. As a whole, it is often spoken of as a monadic essence, though this term is better confided to that portion of it which is clothed only in the atomic matter of the various planes. This name was originally given to it because it has become fit to provide permanent atoms to monads. When it ensouls matter of the lower sub-planes of each plane, that is, all the sub-planes below the atomic, which consist of molecular matter, it is known as elemental essence. This name is borrowed from the writings of medieval occultists, it having been bestowed by them on the matter of which the bodies of nature spirits were composed, for they spoke of these as elementals, dividing them into classes belonging to the elements of fire, air, water and earth. When the outpouring, or wave of the divine life, which in some previous eon, has finished its downward evolution through the buddhic plane pours down into the highest level of the mental plane, it ensouls great masses of atomic mental matter. In this its simplest condition, it does not combine the atoms into molecules in order to form a body for itself, but simply applies by its attraction an immense compressing force to them. We may imagine the force, on first reaching this plane on its downward swoop, to be entirely unaccustomed to its vibrations, and unable at first to respond to them. During the eon which it will spend on this level, its evolution will consist in accustoming itself to vibrate at all rates which are possible there, so that at any moment it can ensoul and use any combination of the matter of that plane. During this long period of evolution it will have taken upon itself all possible combinations of the matter of the three arupa formless, or causal levels, but at the end of the time it returns to the atomic level, not, of course as it was before, but bearing latent within it all the powers which it has gained. The wave of life, then, having drawn together the matter of the causal plane, combines it into what at that level corresponds to substances, and of these substances builds forms which it inhabits. This is, page 13, called the first elemental kingdom. As we are here dealing with the monadic essence on its downward arc, progress for it means descent into matter instead of us with us, ascent towards higher planes. Hence this essence, even on the causal plane, is less evolved than we are, not more so, but it would perhaps be more accurate to say that it is less involved, as its evolution, in the strict sense of that term, has not yet commenced. There are seven subdivisions in the first elemental kingdom. The highest corresponds with the first subplane, the second, third and fourth correspond with the second subplane, the fifth, and sixth and seventh correspond with the third subplane. After spending a whole chain period evolving through different forms at that level, the wave of life, which is all the time pressing steadily downwards, identifies itself so fully with these forms that, instead of occupying them and withdrawing from them periodically, it is able to hold them permanently and make them part of itself. When that stage is reached, it can proceed to the temporary occupation of forms at a still lower level. Accordingly, it takes forms on the lower mental, or rupa, form, levels of the mental plane, and is known then as the second elemental kingdom. The student should note that the ensouling life resides on the higher mental or causal level, while the vehicles through which it manifests are on the lower mental plane. The second elemental kingdom is divided into seven subdivisions. The highest subdivision corresponds with the fourth subplane, the second and third divisions with the fifth subplane, the fourth and fifth subdivision with the sixth subplane, the sixth and seventh divisions with the seventh subplane.